What do you have to do to be saved? That's the question on our minds this morning. What do you have to do to be saved? Or who do you have to be? Was it the case that once all you needed was to be an Israelite and you'd be saved? And now all you need is a Christian family and you're saved? What does it mean to be saved anyway? Is there anything to be saved from? Well, if you're investigating Christianity for the first time, those are questions that are obviously top priority. But Christians don't fall asleep, because I think there are, in fact, huge numbers of Christians who have not properly sorted these questions out. And I number myself as one of them. This is my wrestle. I know that I sin, and when I sin, I feel that I cannot approach the Lord in prayer. I just feel I can't do it. I'm too wicked. Ring a bell? I base my relationship with him on my performance all too easily. Well, let's do a tester for you. Imagine, the sermon is finally over, and you're heading out the door, and as you pass me heading out, I just pull you aside and I say, friend, how is your relationship with the Lord today? Now, what is your gut reaction? Is it, that thing I did last night? Oh, that thing I didn't do this morning? Now, of course, you might be able to fool me. That's easy. But is your reaction actually that your relationship with the Lord isn't as good as it could be? Well, if that is you, then you can't have properly sorted out our question. What do you have to do to be saved? So let's turn to deal with that question now. The answer is in the story we had read to us earlier, Joshua 2 on page 216. Do turn that up if you've closed it. Joshua 2, page 216. Now, the book of Joshua is a great place to find out about salvation. If you're here last week, you'll remember we were told that Joshua means the Lord is salvation. And if we get a little bit more technical, the Hebrew word to save, which is the root of the word Joshua, literally means to give space. And that is what the book of Joshua is all about. The Lord gives his people space in the promised land they're about to enter. And that is a miniature of the big picture of the whole Bible. The Lord wants to give his people space in a renewed heavens and on a renewed earth. The question is, to whom will he give space? Well, right at the outset, before the Israelites go into the land, the Lord wants to make the answer to that question crystal clear. So Joshua 2 tells us exactly the kind of person to whom the Lord wants to give space, the kind of person the Lord will save. So let's check it out now. Joshua 2, verse 1. The scene is set. The Israelite camp is right on the border of Canaan. Canaan, do you remember that wonderful land filled with the most wicked of people? The land the Lord had promised to give to Israel? And Israel is poised, ready to move in. So Joshua, the human leader of Israel, wants to do some military reconnaissance of the land. And in particular, he wants a good military map of that great gateway fortress of Jericho, the Old Testament Fort Knox. And he wants rampart location, he wants troop strength, he wants topography, the lot. So he handpicks two men from his special forces and sends them in. But he sends them, well, where does he send them? You have a look. Where does he send them from? Verse 1. He sends them from Shittim. Now, the very mention of Shittim should send a shiver down our spines, for Shittim is the place where only very recently all Israel had got involved in sexual immorality with pagan Moabites. And that had led to Israel worshipping Baal. And you can check that out in Numbers 25. Shittim is the place where very recently 24,000 people died because of the Lord's anger at Israel's immorality and idolatry. And that's important because having been sent from there by General Joshua, where do the spies head? Well, they're desert born and bred. It's their first trip to the big city. And like so many other wide-eyed young men, the bright lights prove a little overwhelming. Soon they've found their way to the red light district and to a brothel. And they went there not after they've been found out, so they're just looking for any door just to rush into to hide in. No, this is the first place they visit. Well, what were we to expect? They've just come from Shittim. But this is a disaster. We don't want a repeat of Shittim. Moses had only just warned that the greatest danger in the land that they'd be going into would be this. Relationships with idolaters would cause the Israelites to, Deuteronomy 31, prostitute themselves to the foreign gods of the land they're entering. Now let me read just two verses from Leviticus 18 and 19, which are verses that Moses taught Israel. I'm just reading them so that we can understand the nature of the problem here, why this is such a big deal. First, Moses said, Israel, do not degrade your daughter by making her a prostitute, or the land will turn to prostitution and be filled with wickedness. Then Moses said, and if you defile the land like that, it will vomit you out as it vomited out the nations that were before you. So things really don't look good. Like a new year, they go into a new land and things go wrong in the first moments. Here they go, verse 1. Straight from the Moabite women of Shittim to a foreign brothel where literally they lie down. And what's worse, it's a foreign brothel run by a Madame Rahab. Now, if you're going to go to a brothel, you really shouldn't go to this one. Rahab is an absolutely filthy name, so much so I'm not going to translate it. I think it'd be unhelpful. But it would be something like going to a brothel called the House of Satan. You know, you'd probably advise people to steer clear of that one at least. But as if things aren't bad enough already, things now start to go terribly wrong. Verse 2. Someone rats on them to the authorities. And the next thing Rahab knows, the police are hammering at her door. Rahab, you've got enemy agents inside, she's told. Bring them out.
No,
Rahab replies. No, such nice young men. They can't have been. Well, they were here earlier, but we concluded our business just a little while ago. But if you hurry, I bet you could catch them. They went that way. So the cops scurry off. What did you expect? She's hardly Mother Teresa, and these men are a good bit of trade. Because she knows exactly where they are. She had hidden them herself up in the attic. Well, on the roof. But their worries aren't over yet, and neither are ours. Notice the detail at the end of verse 7. The cops leave, sirens blaring, and the city gate is shut. The men are trapped. What can they do? They lie down for the night, and she goes up to join them. Now, what must be about to happen? They're lying down in a brothel, and in walks the prostitute, and she said to them, right, lads, the fees are these. But no. And here is the shock. Here's where all our expectations are turned on their heads. We know the story, perhaps, and so it's not a shock, but read it for the first time, and this is the change. And our two gallant young men must have got the shock of their lives. In this prostitute glides, and she says, verse 9, I know that the Lord has given this land to you. What? She knows Israel's God by name. And she then proceeds to give a quick summary of the whole Exodus story. Look at verse 9. Rahab the prostitute speaking. I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard, our hearts sank or melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. Now, she is practically quoting Moses, and she is authenticating in the best way possible what Moses had said when all Israel had escaped from Egypt through the Red Sea. Moses had said in Exodus 15 that because of what the Lord had done in rescuing his people from Egypt, he said, the nations will hear and tremble. The people of Canaan, like in Jericho, will melt away. Terror and dread will fall upon them. She knows exactly what the Lord has done. And friends, faith comes by hearing what the Lord has done. I'll say that again. Faith comes by hearing what the Lord has done. And at the end of verse 11, she knows too that the Lord is God in heaven above and on earth below. Forget all the gods of Jericho. Again, she's obeying precisely what Moses told the Israelites to believe as the application of God's law. Moses had told Israel back in Deuteronomy 4, acknowledge and take to heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on earth below. There is no other. She knows of the Lord of the heavens who is seen face to face as he travels with his people. And she knows that there is a day of judgment coming on the land when all wickedness will be removed from it. She had heard and understood well the lesson of the Exodus. As Jesus said to another Canaanite woman that he met, "Woman, you have great faith." But what must the lads be thinking? This foreign hooker, it's not what you expect when you go to a brothel, a prostitute preaching to her customers. But she's not done yet, because it's not just that she knows about the Lord. She knows that Israel's invasion of the land is going to be nothing like ethnic cleansing. And we need to be as clear as she is on that. What will take place as the Israelites march through Canaan is not just one people taking a land, it is the Lord judging a land. And this divine judgment, it's not the war games of a petty, bloodthirsty, vicious God who leads his equally vicious people against a peace-loving people minding their own business. No. But because the Canaanites willfully persisted in their witchcraft, sorcery, sexual perversion, and corruption, because of their wickedness, they were to be judged and driven out. And you can see that in Deuteronomy 9. And Rahab knows that as a prostitute, she is totally part of all that. She is going to be judged. Have a look at verse 15. Verse 15, do you note, the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Well, most of us know what happened to the walls of Jericho. As they fell, of all the citizens of Jericho, she's going to get crushed first. She knows God will judge the godless. And so Rahab is looking for salvation. So she gets them to swear by the Lord that she's not just going to trust them. She wants them to swear by the Lord that she will be spared with her family. And then, with their escape in hand, possibly with their hands already on the rope, ready to be lowered out the window, they tell her about how she can escape the terror to come. Don't blow our cover, Rahab, and make sure you have this scarlet cord tied in the window, they say. And anyone who you want spared is to gather together in the house. And if anyone goes outside the house, well, on his own head be it. And she agrees. It's a nice, visible, easy setup. But there's quite a bit more to it than just an off-the-cuff solution. Do you notice they refer to the scarlet cord in verse 18 as, do you see it? This scarlet cord. This scarlet cord. It's the rope by which she lets them down. And yet, isn't it an unusual colour bit of rope to have hanging around the house? Does anyone have a bit of scarlet cord knocking around at home? Well, I hope not, because scarlet has always been the colour of sin, hasn't it? And particularly of prostitution. We still talk of someone being a scarlet woman. And Isaiah talks of our sins being like scarlet. And quite possibly, this was the Jericho equivalent of a red light. You could tell a brothel by the scarlet cord. But now, this sign of sin was to become a sign of the gospel. And the same cord by which she spared them was to be the cord by which they spare her. Because they basically just repeated the Passover instructions to her. Do you remember them in Exodus 12? Just as the Israelites smeared blood on their houses so that the angel of the Lord would spare them and spare all those who sheltered under that sign, so Rahab would have this scarlet sign on her house so that all who took shelter on it, under it, would be rescued from the wrath of the angel of the Lord who was about to destroy Jericho. The scarlet will preserve her when the trumpet sounds and the wicked are judged. And so it happened. Rahab is saved. The trumpet sounded, the walls came down, and all that was left was one little bit of wall sticking up above the rubble. And there's the scarlet cord in the window. It's Rahab. I think that's worth seeing. So let's just flick over a couple of pages to Joshua 6 to see the moment of salvation. Joshua 6, and let's go from verse 20. Joshua 6, verse 20. When the trumpet sounded, the people shouted. And at the sound of the trumpet, when the people gave a loud shout, the wall collapsed so that every man charged straight in and they took the city. They devoted the city to the Lord and destroyed with a sword every living thing in it, men and women, young and old, cows, cattle, sheep, and donkeys. Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring her out and all who belong to her in accordance with your oath to her." So the young men who had done the spying went in and brought out Rahab, her father and mother and brothers, and all who belonged to her. They brought out her family and put them in a place outside the camp of Israel. Then they burned the whole city and everything in it. But they put the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron into the treasury of the Lord's house. But Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family and all who belonged to her because she hid the men Joshua had sent as spies to Jericho. And she lives among the Israelites to this day. So, before Israel even goes into the land, they know it is faith in the Lord that counts for salvation and not who you are related to. It was never the case that there was once a time when all you needed was Jewish parents. Otherwise, Rahab could have pleaded all she wanted and never been rescued. Now, just turn over the page to see Joshua 4, verse 24. Joshua 4, verse 24. Do you see, there we're told, the Lord dried up the Red Sea and the Jordan to let his people cross so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful. And flick over two more pages to Joshua 8, verse 33. Joshua 8, verse 33. Where you can see Israel is said to consist of aliens and citizens alike. That is Israel, aliens and citizens alike. So you don't have to be an ethnic Israelite for the Lord to give you space with his people in his land. You just have to trust him. And Rahab does just that. And to a promiscuous woman is shown promiscuous grace. For she is no pillar of the community. Remember, she's a prostitute. And so it is made clear that it is by her faith, and by her faith in the Lord of Israel alone, that she is saved, and not by any moral recommendation she might have to her name. Well, nothing's changed today. Perhaps there's someone sitting here now or listening to the recording, and you have a very dark past or a very dark present. Trust the Lord like Rahab, and you'll be saved like Rahab. Well, what could we call this story? We could call it the faith of Rahab, belief from a brothel, the story of a shady lady. But I wonder if we shouldn't call it from prostitute to princess. For having simply trusted in the Lord as the God who will judge the wicked, from then on, throughout the Bible, Rahab is counted as a great hero of the faith, a prostitute. She trusts the Lord, and she is spared from judgment. And then we saw that she settled down to live amongst the Israelites. Well, we find out a bit later that she married Salmon. Salmon may sound a bit fishy. He was just a tester for you. See if you're awake. Actually, he was the great prince of the house of Judah. Now, of course, it's possible that Salmon was one of the two spies, so we know where they met. After all, it had been, well, there's a reason. You see, it had been the head of the house of Judah who'd been one of Moses' spies back in Numbers 13, so maybe. Anyway, Rahab married the prince of the royal house of Judah. From prostitute, she becomes a princess in Israel. Those who trust the Lord will find he will do for them immeasurably more than all they ask or imagine. And one day, Rahab's great-grandson would be born in Bethlehem and given the name Jesus. And you can see that in Matthew 1. It makes sense. The same Lord whom she feared should, when born in Bethlehem, have a particular compassion for all those ladies of the evening he met. Maybe, in fact, I'm quite sure he remembered great-grandma Rahab. Now, if you are a Christian, do you believe this? Do you really believe this, that the Lord is willing to have anybody saved? Anybody, of any race, of any lifestyle? That they don't have to start becoming more moral to be closer to the kingdom. A moral person, of course, is generally far nicer to live with, but is no closer to being saved than the guy who makes everyone's life a misery. Now, to say that the church is only for the nice and clean is like saying a hospital is only for the doctors and nurses. Together, for them both, there is one solution. Just as the trumpet sounded and the wicked of Jericho were judged, so the trumpet will soon sound again, the great last trumpet. And then the wicked of all the earth will be judged. The question then will not be how moral or successful they've been. I'm sure there were many more moral and successful citizens in Jericho. The only issue of relevance on that day will be, have they sheltered under the Lord's protection as Rahab did all those years ago? Have they sheltered under the scarlet sign of Jesus' blood shed on the cross? That will be the only issue. Now, knowing that that great day is coming and coming soon, if we Christians have any compassion, we will tell people of it. And we will tell people that there is a rescue. They can be saved if they only trust this Lord. So why not take advantage of those guest events? Bring a friend along. Take advantage of these guest services coming up. Have compassion. This great day is coming. But before I end, perhaps I should ask, which are you? Are you, like the rest of the Jerichoites, refusing to trust him? If that is you, then know this. Friend, a day is coming, very soon, when all the wickedness, not just of a city, but the whole world, will be wiped away. And that should make all the inhabitants of the world, all of whom participate in its wickedness, tremble and melt with fear like those Canaanites did. Anyone who knows this to be a reality can only tremble at the terror to come. And this is not to frighten, it is to prepare so that, like Rahab, you too can be ready simply by taking shelter under the protection of the Lord. Or are you a Rahab, full of faults, yet trusting the Lord? Well, just that simple trust will see you as blessed as Rahab. Your relationship with the Lord is as good as it could be when you simply trust him. You are spared, saved. You are right before God, completely and utterly, when you simply believe what he says. Now, your heart may be dark or it may feel fine, but that is not the ground for confidence. The closest intimacy with the Lord is given to people on one condition, that they trust him. So if that's you, and I do ask you as you head out the door, how is your relationship with the Lord today? You can simply say, I have put my trust in the Lord. I am right with him. Let's pray. Great Lord of heaven, thank you that an immoral person can be spared simply for trusting you. We all have hearts as dark as that prostitute's. So give us Rahab's trust and confidence in you. And give us your concern that all people, however wicked, might turn to your protection, ready for the great day of your coming. Amen.